The following is an exclusive presentation of News Radio KMAN, your home for K-State Athletics. This is Wildcat Insider with the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, and KMAN Sports Director, Mitch Fortner.
We come to you on this Monday afternoon with some pretty big news. It's finally happening. The news broke about an hour ago. I was watching some extended pregame on ESPN for the national championship game between Georgia and TCU. And all of a sudden, they just jump right into the new class to be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. And whose name did we see? None other than K-State quarterback Michael Bishop is finally going to be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame, a part of the class of 2023. Welcome to Wildcat Insider. Mitch Fortner and the voice of the Wildcats. That is Hall of Fame voice to us, Wyatt Thompson. And we will get into some basketball for sure. I mean, the Cats now ranked number 11 in the country in the AP poll. They're number 13 in the coaches poll. Pretty big game tomorrow. I know Coach Tang and staff want to see those purple fans in the building at Bramlage Coliseum against Oklahoma State. And I just looked very recently at the tickets. Looks like under 100 left.
Yes.
For it to be a sellout.
Well, I'll be honest. I wasn't sure there would be something today happen big enough to take men's basketball off the front page here, right? To start our show, so to speak. But Michael Bishop making the College Football Hall of Fame, wow. It's about time. Congratulations to one of the most electric athletes slash college football players probably most of us have ever seen.
Gosh,
this is too late in coming, and I'm thrilled for him.
It is. Yeah. We were going over the criteria because we didn't. I couldn't remember. You can remember about, you know, how many times can you be nominated or on the ballot to be voted in or however it works in the College Football Hall of Fame. I guess there's that window. It's from 10 years after you played to 50 years after you played to be inducted. Well, guys, believe it or not, it's been 25 years, if you can believe that.
When you said that a moment ago off the air, it almost took my breath away because when I hear 1998, it just seems like just a few years ago.
Yeah.
25 years ago, but it is reality. But again, I'll be repetitive here. Couldn't happen to a better guy. You know what? Between he and Coach Snyder together, they changed college football. They changed the game, and in a lot of ways, how it was played. And they're still with that effect, even up to the pro level today, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. Recruiting the JUCO ranks, and you know, Bill Snyder absolutely was a big catapult to that style of that recruiting, and Michael Bishop was probably the face, is still the face of that style of recruiting, at least for K-State.
There's always been guys back a long, long way, quarterbacks that ran the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But the real true definition of a dual threat guy, from my perspective, would be a guy like that. Because he, a masterful runner, but also with what seemed to be the flick of a wrist, could throw the ball 65 yards downfield. And I'm just here to tell you, man, the good Lord only makes so many of those kind of guys. Well, it's just a fact.
And Michael Bishop, obviously, God, we could go on and on about, and we could really break it down to how special he was. I guess we could if we wanted to, but we got a lot to get to today. But we can spend some time talking about it. 97 was obviously a special year, just the one loss. That was to Nebraska early in the year. You go on to win the Fiesta Bowl. Very special year, just a one loss type of season. But it wasn't Michael's best year. It wasn't. It was 98 where the defense was holding everybody to single digits. Michael Bishop was running all over the field. He was throwing it all over to Darnell McDonald or Aaron Lockett. It was going all over the place. And you're playing for a Big 12 championship and a shot to play for the national championship. Michael Bishop is a runner-up for the Heisman Trophy. He wins the Davey O'Brien Award. Michael Bishop in 98 is still, to me, one of the best quarterback performances I think we've ever seen in college football.
Agreed.
And I thought, you know, that alone would have gotten in the College Football Hall of Fame few years ago. This is not the first time he's been on the ballot. I don't know how many official times he's been on the ballot. It feels like six or seven times, at least, that Michael Bishop has been on the ballot for the College Football Hall of Fame. But I guess better late than never. He absolutely deserves it. He's going in a very star-studded class, I did notice. They had Tim Tebow on the ESPN broadcast. They made a big deal about it because he's on the broadcast. They throw out the names out there. Tim Tebow's not listed. They're like, oh, we left a name off here. Oh, Tim Tebow is going into the College Football Hall of Fame, which some consider him like the greatest college football quarterback of all time, whatever. But I'll be honest with you. Like, my memory of Michael Bishop, I only got to see him play live twice, and I was 7 and 8. When he played. Mm-hmm. You know, during that time, I wasn't playing the closest attention to K-State football. Like, on weekends, I was either going somewhere to play sports or outside playing with my friends. I remember really getting into K-State football, you know, in the very early 2000s, the Jonathan Beasley era is when I really started to get into it as a kid. But I knew who Michael Bishop was. And I remember watching the 98 Nebraska game at home. And that was one of the first games I remember watching at home. My first ever K-State football game was the 97 Colorado game, where K-State hadn't beaten Colorado in many years, and it was snowing, and the fans stormed the field. This is long overdue. And I feel like this is I don't know if I can put this in the correct words. It just feels like, you know, this is a big win for Kansas State. Basketball just picked up two big ranked wins on the road for K-State Athletics, and one of the best starts in a very long time for K-State men's basketball. But Michael Bishop getting to the Hall of Fame, it just feels like one gigantic win, another gigantic win for us in a stretch now where we feel like we can't lose.
Well, I think this is this Michael Bishop news today kind of just even elevates, if you will, the thought of all K-State fans, or most K-State fans here lately, of what a special time this is with, you know, what happened in this past college football season with K-State winning a third Big 12 championship, those types of things, beating TCU in just a fabulous college football game, and then they go on and win in the semis and play in the national championship game tonight. You know, Coach Tang getting this group off to a 14-1 start, and as you said, beating Texas ranked 6th and Baylor 19th in the AP poll, 16th in the coaches poll, on the road back-to-back, Tuesday, Saturday swing, that after beating West Virginia in overtime. But wow, this is crazy good news. And to put it into perspective, only the fourth Wildcat football player ever inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame to go along with the three coaches, including Coach Snyder. So this is rarefied air, and I'm like you. If anybody deserves it, it certainly would be Michael Bishop. He, oh my gosh, what a player.
Well, let's share some history real quick. So here are the former players and coaches to be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. Gary Spaney was the class of 2002. Mark Cimino, the class of 2012. Darren Sproles was inducted in the class of 2021. And then the coaches are Pappy Waldorf in 66, Charles Bachman, I think I'm saying that right.
You are.
In 78, and then Bill Snyder in 2015. So here are the players that Michael Bishop will be inducted with in the class of 2023. I'll just go in order of how K-State Athletics has typed it up here, as I'm looking at their article. Former Chief Eric Berry, defensive back for Tennessee, Reggie Bush, we all know him. Dwight Freeney, who played defensive end to Syracuse. Robert Gallery from Iowa. LaMichael James of Oregon, running back. I remember him quite well. I think this is long overdue as well. Derek Johnson.
No doubt.
Linebacker from Texas, and of course, played for the Kansas City Chiefs. Bill Kolar, who played at Montana State.
Luke Kuechly, good football player, man.
Yeah, linebacker from Boston College. Jeremy Macklin, played in Missouri. Terrence Mathis from New Mexico. Bryant McKinney, who played at Miami. Corey Moore from Virginia Tech. Michael Stonebreaker, who played linebacker at Notre Dame. Tim Tebow. Troy Vincent, the defensive back from Wisconsin. Brian Westbrook, who played running back at Villanova. D'Angelo Williams, I've met him in person, actually, running back from Memphis. And then the coaches going in this year, Monty Cater, who coached at Lakeland in Wisconsin, and also Shepherd in West Virginia. Paul Johnson from Georgia Southern, Navy, and Georgia Tech. Roy Kramer from Central Michigan, and Mark Richt, who coached in Miami and Georgia.
Mm-hmm. That's quite a list. There are a lot of really talented people in that group, and it's really so satisfying, I guess I'll say, to finally, you know, recognize Michael for, you know, where he should be in my mind, in the College Football Hall of Fame. Just special.
K-State also listed here what Michael Bishop was able to do in just a short amount of time. I mean, I don't know if this is for a fact, but I mean, a 2-year career of 22-3, it's got to be the best run for a 2-year season span. I have to go look that up a little bit later just to confirm that, but I'll let that stand for now. But 26 games, and he held multiple, 26 game, season, and career records he held during his time or after his time here at K-State, including career rushing yards by a quarterback. He had career rushing touchdowns by a quarterback. A lot of, obviously, quarterback, but also a lot of running records as well. So, we all know who Michael Bishop is. He's obviously deserving of this honor. I think he was even advocating for himself because he knows that he certainly deserves to get into the College Football Hall of Fame. It's long overdue. We could keep talking about Michael Bishop and how special he is to us. But now it's finally time that he will be officially, like, forever enshrined into the College Football Hall of Fame as one of the greats. He was robbed of the Heisman Trophy in 1998. But you know what? This isn't too bad. This isn't too bad to finally show off. Yeah. That he is certainly one of the greats.
Yeah, I don't know that you look at it as necessarily a consolation prize, but if that's kind of the way you want to look at it, then it's a pretty darn good consolation prize because this is the pinnacle of a college football player. I remember having this conversation with Darren Sproles. You don't go into this thinking, you know, that, yeah, I'm going to go be a Hall of Famer, you know, those kind of things. It's not the way it works. But, man, it's so great to see him in there with those other guys who are, wow. That's, you talk about a heck of a list of players. You're probably a little bit young for Gary Spaney, but yeah. Trust me, dude, he was a dog, as they say nowadays. And, of course, Seminole, and now Darren Sproles and Mr. Michael, that's pretty good. Outstanding.
Well, and I don't know. Like, it just kind of jumped into my mind because of, you know, the run case they made in 2011 and 2012. If a player like Colin Klein would be, because his 10-year window of now being nominated for the College Football Hall of Fame, would somebody like him be, you know, certainly in the running for the College Football Hall of Fame? And I would certainly think so. Like, I think he would be the next Wildcat, and, you know, probably Tyler Lockett as well would be another one that. It's just kind of on my radar to be, all right, if there's an ex-Wildcat to jump on the radar, who should be coming up? You know, probably looking at those two, I would imagine.
Yeah, I guess I could certainly understand that. I think there are, you know, maybe a couple of others too. But,
yeah.
Wow, it's, again, can't say enough about its time. And it's just such a great feeling to know that, as special as those 2 years were at K-State, and he was kind of the, in terms of the players, the leader of that group, and just his amazing talents and athleticism, couldn't be more thrilled for the guy. And not to mention the fact that this is just my opinion, but I find him to be such a humble guy for what he's accomplished. You know what I mean? Really good person to talk to, and he loves K-State. Loves K-State.
I know this is a weird choice, but this has always been my favorite Michael Bishop play. I know he's had a lot of deep throws, a lot of amazing plays by his wide receivers, incredible runs. I think just that throw to Darnell McDonald in the 98 Nebraska game. Back of the end zone, he's just standing there. It's like, for some reason, that's the one that stands out to me as my most favorite. Because that was other than, of course, you know, the scoop and score, you know, to make it a 10-point game. But the back of the end zone to go up three, I was like, just standing there. And the place goes nuts.
Yeah.
And he just Somebody jumps into his arms. Amazing play. All right. What a career from Michael Bishop, finally going into the College Football Hall of Fame. When we come back, we're not done with football because we need to talk to Wyatt about the trip to New Orleans. Cats go into the Sugar Bowl, and we'll also just look back. What was the 2022 K-State football season after this on Wildcat Insider? The breaking news today, Michael Bishop, trailblazer for all the running quarterbacks out there. Heisman Trophy runner-up in 98, won the Davey O'Brien. Will finally go into the College Football Hall of Fame, a part of the class of 2023. What we did not mention in the last segment, that induction ceremony will be taking place. Let's see here. I kind of lost where I was. Okay. So it'll be taking place December 5th of this year in Vegas. 65th annual National Football Foundation's College Football Hall of Fame class 2023. So once again, congratulations to all number 7, Michael Bishop, on this amazing honor. Wyatt, we have not had a chance yet to talk about the Sugar Bowl. Talk about New Orleans, just kind of wrap up, put a bow on the 2022 K-State football season. That, of course, the highlight was winning the Big 12 championship in Arlington back in early December. But first, about New Orleans, did you get a chance to get out there, see the town, get some eats, go to a good restaurant or two?
Probably more like several as opposed to one or two. It's a spectacular place to eat, if that's your deal, right?
I stayed an extra day so I could go eat.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, what I would say is that I thought, first and foremost, the week for all of the K-State team, meaning coaches, staff, players, was something special. You know, you always, you know, hear about the New Year's Six bowl games and how awesome they are. I would tell you that that's absolutely right. I think the players were overwhelmed by just all of the activities they got to do that were tied into the bowl. And then actually a little bit of time each day to kind of get out and do their own thing. I think many of them very much enjoyed that part of it. From the perspective of the, I think what I learned there in that week was there are a whole bunch of people on that committee for the Sugar Bowl that take so much pride in absolutely putting on one of the best bowl games in college football history for many, many years, dating back to 1935. They're closing in on 100 years, man, and they know what they're doing. Great group of people. The media staff, lead people on that were exemplary, I think. Not much I would change other than probably the last minute of the first half and the first couple of 2 or 3 minutes of the third quarter. other than that, it was a pretty darn good week, and it was I think for me, I guess I'll add this. I think that the players were very disappointed that they didn't play at the level that they wanted to. I think we all know what kind of coach team Alabama is, how talented they are. And despite that, I think K-State is well coached. I think they had a good plan. I think they, especially in most of the first half, executed that. But you give Alabama an inch and they usually kick the door in and take a mile, right? And I think we saw a little bit of that too. But that does not take the shine off of what this group accomplished. It was a magnificent season from my perspective.
I mean, the Sugar Bowl was an experience to remember, maybe not so much a game to remember, other than the first quarter. And K-State jumping out to that 10-0 lead, Deuce Vaughn going for, what was it, 88 yards and a touchdown, which, by the way, he finishes up with the longest run of his career. I thought that was some sweet icing on the cake.
Yep.
And Deuce Vaughn has now since announced that he is going to be giving up his last 2 years of eligibility and jumping to the NFL draft. Malik Knowles has said he's going to the NFL draft. Offensive line's all coming back, but, it's going to be a different-looking team next year for sure, but first of all, I got there on that Wednesday before, and I decided I was going to just kind of walk through the French Quarter, go to Bourbon Street, of course. It was already nighttime. I got there pretty late, like 10:30. And I just wanted to see, like, is there already a bunch of K-State fans down here? Is it going to be packed? No, not really. It was just I saw a bunch of K-State players.
Yeah.
Just kind of walking around. Just that's about all they were doing, walking around. And some had some bags. Maybe they got some, you know, souvenirs or whatever. And that was about it. Saw a few Alabama players. That was about it. It really ramped up the next day.
Yes.
And it got pretty crowded.
From Thursday on, it was amazing. And I think it you probably would have seen more maybe as early as Wednesday, late afternoon, into the evening, had it not been for the travel issues of so many. I guess we'll just leave it at that. But there were lots and lots of flights that were canceled, and people flying out of Kansas City trying to get to New Orleans had to find other ways. And not just Kansas City, but Kansas City, there were a bunch. For me personally, it was extraordinary getting to the pep rally about 90 minutes prior to the start, or almost 2 hours actually. And then watching them just
traffic
fill their
plate.
It was amazing to – and unfortunately, not everybody got in. They had to turn a few away. But, wow, just the excitement that they had for what this team had just accomplished with not only the season but the win against TCU. I mean, just it was just electric in the building. I don't know how else to describe it. It was unbelievable.
I'll put it this way. So I did like the first 50 minutes of this show. It was Friday, so the game.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I just did it by myself, and I just kind of cue it up to toss it to some clips of them, of the players talking or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But when I hit the air, people were still running in, and I compared it to Black Friday. It was like everybody wanted the best seats, and like people were running to the front row and trying to find seats or saving seats. And I remember standing up 10 minutes before it started. I was at a commercial. I just looked up. I was like, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
It is wall to wall. This is a big room. This is a convention center.
Yes.
So it's a gigantic
a
room.
A very big convention center.
Yeah. And it's full. I was like, holy crap.
Yeah. Well, they had several what I'll describe as large rooms, individual rooms. But this K-State, you'd be proud to know that K-State had the biggest room in that facility and stuffed it.
Yeah.
It was so great, and saw so many friendly faces and, just great K-State people to, you know, and they were so excited to be there and experience that. And then after the game, Stan and I are making our way back to the hotel probably not quite 2 hours after the game ended, because we're on air for almost an hour and, you know, it takes a little bit of time to get out of there. But wow, as we came back towards the hotel, and it's not a very long drive. I mean, we're talking about 9/10 of a mile, I think, from the Superdome to the Hilton Riverside. But every place you passed, you look in the building, there's K-Staters everywhere. You look on the sidewalk waiting to get into the building, same thing. It was impressive. I don't know if you noticed that or saw that, but, man, that was something.
Well, our hotel, we stayed at the Sheraton. It was the media hotel. Right. There was also a bunch of K-State alumni, part of the Alumni Association, that were staying there. I noticed, like, the lobby was always full and people were hanging out. But I was also thinking at the same time, I was like, what are you guys doing? Get out of here. Go see the city.
Yeah.
Don't be in this hotel lobby drinking and eating and stuff. There's way better out there in the city. But
maybe we're pacing themselves, Mitch. Later that night, I'm sure, right?
Oh, I'm sure, yes. Yeah. Well, I went out on New Year's Eve and after the game, of course, and while the college football playoff was going on. Wasn't as actually packed as I thought it would be, but it was still a great time. K-State fans, even though lost that day, was out having a good time. It was just an overall fantastic experience. It's been my favorite bowl game experience, and I just love New Orleans. So it's,
sure, that's part of it, absolutely. But again, I want to stress this. The effort of the committee and what they did to make that a special week, because the football team got in there noonish on Monday the 26th and then flew out of there at about 10:30 in the morning. Well, they were delayed a little bit, I guess, but they left New Year's Day delayed a bit by fog, but then came back, and then our plane was probably a couple of hours after that. So I guess I'll say this, reveal this too. I got home on New Year's Day at about 3:30 and left at 3:15 the next day for Austin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I was home almost 24 hours, but what a 2 weeks. It'll be a 2 weeks that I'll always remember.
Well, I want to I just kind of want to, you know, put a bow on the season, just kind of share some thoughts just about the season as a whole. I predicted on Powercat Game Day K-State would finish the regular season 10-2. And I think they maybe said 9-3, 10-2, 9-3, somewhere in that area. And I think most people thought this could be a very special season. Would 9-3 get you the Big 12 championship? Potentially. Yeah, absolutely, for sure. It could definitely happen, which it did. But the way the season started, to beat South Dakota, obliterate Missouri in nasty weather, mm-hmm. Tulane comes into town and you lose. We thought at that time, what is this season going to be now? This is not good.
Sure.
And I, probably should have given more credit to Tulane before. They on paper it seemed like they had a pretty good defense, so defensive line would be great. Tulane beats us 17-10. You probably felt like you're a couple of plays away from maybe tying and winning that game. You never know. And then the Oklahoma game happens. And if it wasn't for Adrian Martinez, who knows what this season would have been. I think Adrian deserves so much credit for, the first half of the season, getting K-State into a position physically, mentally, statistically, in a position to even get to Arlington, to even have a shot at beating an undefeated TCU team and go into the Sugar Bowl. I think without Adrian Martinez, who knows where this season would have been. But if it wasn't for him and his performance in that Oklahoma contest, I don't know. That was one of the best performances I think I've ever seen from a K-State quarterback, especially with what he was able to do running the football.
Sure.
And he was letting it loose a little bit. He needed to let it go, and he started to throw the football down the field. That's where I start when I think back at this season. Adrian Martinez and just leading K-State to a 5-1 start. Am I saying that correctly? A 4-1 start. Five and one.
I guess what I would say, and I totally agree with what you're saying, but I would expand it out a little bit in that I think Adrian certainly was the story early on until the injury, especially through the summer and through the preseason and into the non-conference part, and then Oklahoma happened, and it's like, whoa, But there were so many other things that made this such a special season, and that just real briefly with that, everybody knows what it is. But you have the Will Howard story, and you have Deuce Vaughn becoming a consensus All-American for a second time, and all the way through with the defense playing at such a high level throughout the entirety of the year. And then you get in to the championship game and the goal line stand and the overtime win and all those guys are going to be walking around with championship rings one of these days, and that's that's pretty special. So and then to cap it off, even in defeat, to get to a New Year's Six, I think these guys can always probably look at this and say, hey, we were that first group to accomplish that, and you hope that it's not the first and last time, And I think everybody sees K-State football right now in very good hands and with a very, very bright future, and I'm among those thinking that way.
Well, this was a conversation. I think it was on Powercat Game Day. Maybe it was Big 12 championship time, and I kind of just threw it out there about what you're – well, no, maybe it was for the Sugar Bowl, just talking about, how we feel about next year, and I feel like – You feel pretty strong about next year. It could be another special year, but I think a big part of that is you know who the quarterback's going to be. Mm-hmm. You're not in this – it's not a situation where Coach Kleiman and the staff needs to go out and get another ringer like Adrian Martinez. You're now comfortable with Will Howard being the guy. And then you're hoping behind him, Jake Rubley, Adrian Lara – Avery Johnson, they will start develop, and you'll get another starting quarterback out of that.
Sure.
And now transfer portal, you can look in other directions, like at running back right now, who's going to be helping build that depth once again, along with DJ Giddens. But also this season, you saw some guys grow up. Brennan Mott is a great example. Austin Moore, defensively. Kobe Savage is coming back. And how special was that guy as a JUCO transfer to come in and just be special from the first game?
No doubt.
And he's going out there making some hits.
And not just special in his play, but everything else too.
It's a leader.
Yes, very much a leader, emotionally, physically, all of those types of things. I'm knock on wood, I'm hoping he's healthy by the time next season rolls around, because he is just such a – I look at him and V.J. Payne kind of leading that safety grouping. And of course, K-State has to, you know, replace two really, really, really fine corners. But we saw Josh Parrish and others, you know, step in there.
Yeah.
And people forget the fact that, you know, basically K-State redshirted five guys, safety slash corners, in 2022 that will be ready to rock and roll in 2023. So, yeah, holes, certainly. Replacing Eli Huggins will not be easy. Replacing Deuce Vaughn is almost impossible, really. I mean, you'll do it. You move on. But what a special, special talent. We're going to talk about a future Hall of Famer one of these days. There's one right there. Don't you think?
Yes.
I mean, to not think that he's would be considered after, you know, back-to-back consensus All-America seasons is crazy. He'll be considered.
Well, and he wasn't a Heisman finalist or anything, or, you know, voted in the top five, or, you know, but yeah, I mean, one of the absolute best all-purpose type of backs you would find in college football this season, no doubt. And last year.
And for three, you know, he did it for three years, too. That's the other factor. I mean, it's not a lock, certainly, but I know he'll be a Ring of Honor guy, or in my mind, he will be.
Mine, too.
And a K-State Hall of Famer,
probably.
He's
a guarantee.
Yeah. So, and one of the best young people I've been around, and I've been so fortunate with so many. He's right near the top of the list. He's humble. He's so gifted. Was all about the Cats, and that's what he cared about, you know? he was special. So, this is one year that we'll look on fondly for many years to come.
Yeah, Deuce Vaughn, that is a kid I am going to miss. Hashtag my boy. From day one, saw the potential in him, and he absolutely not only lived up to but exceeded expectations. The fan base just loved him from the first game against Arkansas State. Blows up against Oklahoma. That Oklahoma catch he had for 70 yards or whatever it was, where he just kind of slides through a outside linebacker's hands or whoever is covering him in the slot, and that run, I was like, that's still my favorite play.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, he had a bunch of them, that's for sure.
Do you have one? Do you have a favorite play? I was asking everybody last week.
Yeah.
Suppose we can continue on that.
I would give me a little bit to think about that, because there were so many. You know what? The touchdown run he had against TCU.
Yeah.
Where he has that juke at about the 20-yard line. The guy had zero chance, and I think he knew it. would first come to mind, but there were so many others that, I mean, man.
We had a forgettable one of those type of runs at Baylor.
Oh, for sure.
Where he juked a guy and easily gets into the end zone. And, I mean, I'm sure he's done that more times than we can remember. I brought up the play against Gavin Potter of Kansas when he juked him. Oh, that's a pretty good one, too, I can admit.
Yeah, no doubt.
Especially
there were many.
Yeah.
And he'll certainly be missed. But, I'll just emphasize this. I do think the recruiting has gone well. You've got, you know, the fact that some of these offensive linemen have committed to coming back, there may be more. Who knows? We don't know that yet, but I think as you look towards next year, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic, for sure.
If you like the shirtless picks after the games from the offensive line, I'm sure that's another that's another part of K-State that's coming back for next year as well. All right, well, that'll put a bow on K-State football in the 2022 season. When we come back, I'm sure we'll jump in now to some K-State hoops. Not just that, the Big 12. Big 12's off to a great start, but maybe none better than what the Wildcats have been doing the last three games. Up next, after these words, good right now.
Yeah, let me put into context how good, okay? The net ranking of the league is at 26.8. The next lowest conference is at 56.8. That's crazy.
Well, and probably just a couple of days ago before Saturday, you probably would have seen that number for the Big 12 be a lot better, because everybody was in the top 45, and
they're in the all of them are in the top 41 of KenPom.
Okay.
The entire league.
I think Texas Tech dropped in the net ranking to number 60.
Yeah,
I think that's the worst in the Big 12.
It is. They're 60. Okay. So you've got Kansas at 4, Texas 10, K-State 11, Iowa State 15, West Virginia 19, TCU 30, Baylor 31, Oklahoma State 40, Oklahoma 48, Tech 60.
Okay.
Yikes.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, I think the Big 12 has shown that they are the conference to beat, and it's going to be a dogfight week in and week out, and game in and game out. I was looking at K-State's schedule earlier today, and I felt like, you know, I think the first half of K-State's schedule is the proving ground. It's going to be tougher than the second half of the schedule. Just if you just look at who's playing in Manhattan versus who K-State is playing on the road.
You're saying like tougher in the second half?
I think it's easier in the second
half. Easier in the second half, okay.
Because you have road trips to Oklahoma State and Oklahoma.
As opposed to Texas Baylor.
As opposed to Texas and TCU.
Uh-huh.
TCU was the one I'm like, okay, I think that fan base is going to be pretty pumped up right now.
Oh, sure.
Because their team is playing in the national championship tonight. Their basketball team is a top 20 team. They happen to be one of the fastest in transition I think I've seen all season, and I think their transition points prove that because I think they're the best in the country in transition point or fast break points. Boy, does that team turn defense into offense? Because I was watching, was it Wednesday night? They played at Baylor. I was like, Jesus, team likes to run. They got to be the most in shape team, I think.
Well, and maybe the one of the deepest teams in the league. I was working on some of their stuff today. I'd worked so much over the last couple of days on Oklahoma State, but they hit, and I'm talking about TCU now. They have all five starters back from last year, and I'll remind everybody that a year ago they were a 21-win team. But Emmanuel Miller, Chuck O'Bannon, Eddie Lampkin, Damian Baugh, Mike Miles, that's a pretty good starting group, and then their bench is Micah Peavy, Rondell Walker, Xavier Cork, Shahade Wells, and Jacoby Coles. That's that's pretty legit. And they are really, really – you're right. I mean, in transition here – we in this part of the country are talking a lot about Marquise Noel. Mike Miles – this is how good Marquise is. Mike Miles is averaging 24.7 points a game in Big 12 play. I get it that it's a small sample size. Marquise is at 30.3.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, and I think we could probably get into this a little bit more in the second hour. We're in short time right now. But I think this is a – because I am advocating as – I think Marquise Noel is the best player in the Big 12.
Do you really?
I know there's a lot of arguments out there. Jalen Wilson – you know, his argument is he's been at KU for 4 years. He's a leading scorer. He's one of the better rebounders in the conference. I think he's probably, other than Musa Cisse of Oklahoma State, who we'll see tomorrow, he's probably the best rebounder in the Big 12. You know, we can get into that more. But I feel like Marquise Noel, when it comes to what he does for a team, what he has to deal with game in and game out, with his size, I think, and still what he's able to do, I think he's got a very loud argument. Mike Miles is also up there. And watching him play, the way he shoots the basketball, he shoots at a high clip. He's averaging 20 points a game throughout the season. You mentioned 24 in Big 12 play. And they face some tough competition to start the year.
Yeah, they have. There are a lot of talented players in this league. But I think it's probably the safest to say this right now. There's no one any hotter than Kansas State's Marquise Noel.
Correct.
He is taking good shots. He is making shots. His assist-to-turnover ratio is ridiculous. It's 133 assists and only 40 turnovers. He's close to having more steals than turnovers. He's got 34 steals.
I'm telling you, his numbers say he's also one of the best defenders in the Big 12.
Well, he was first team All-Big 12 defensively last year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's better now.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll talk more Marquise Noel. We'll talk more Keontae Johnson and this K-State men's basketball team a lot in hour number two. Plus, we'll get more of a preview of the Oklahoma State team K-State we'll see tomorrow and at TCU on Saturday. And we'll get a prediction on the national championship. An entire second hour. It's going to be a good one. Coming up next, also your local news is in about 3 minutes.